Hey y'all, I'm John Rodriguez. Let's have a chat. We're back with part two of my interview with Victoria Hill. In case you missed it, go back, check out part one. We're picking it up almost right where it left off. And of course, as usual, there are no cuts, there are no trims, there are no removals of anything. Everything's on the table, including very long pauses while stuff happens that interrupts the interview. But, you know, that's okay, because I want to keep it raw. I want to keep it just like it was as it was recorded. But before we get to that, a little bit of business. Hey, y'all, are you in the Kitsap County area? Are you in the greater Seattle area? And do you like professional wrestling? Well, let me tell you. January 25th, Suquamish Tribal Center in Poulsbo, Washington. You are going to want to be there for a big double bill, a huge evening of wrestling featuring the great talent of Suquamish Championship Wrestling and HPG Pro. They're teaming up for a big double show. HPG is going to come at you first at 5 o'clock. And then right after that, you're going to have SCW Presents Eye of the Tiger. A lot of great matches. The SCW Heavyweight Champion, Kellen Wraith, will defend against Hot Hands Mendoza. The vacant Sovereign title will be filled in a battle royale with special stipulations. The last two wrestlers in that match will have to decide it via pinfall or submission. There's going to be a cruiserweight title match. There's going to be tag matches. There's going to be just a whole lot of excitement featuring all your favorite talent from around the area, because it's as simple as this. SCW only wants to give you the best in professional wrestling, and HPG Pro wants to give you the next evolution in sports, entertainment, professional wrestling, call it what you will. They are doing it big. They are doing it right. Both companies. It's so much fun to be a part of it. Don't miss it. January 25th, Suquamish Tribal Center, Poulsbo, Washington. Check out facebook.com/SCW.rebranded for more information. All right, enough of that me shilling for my other gigs. Now, let's get back to our chat with Victoria Hill. Okay, so the stuff you're doing, like you specifically are doing, let's just go back to that.
Okay, so, let's see. So this year I was a parent ambassador, and that is a leadership and advocating program for parents of Head Start or ECAP children, run by the Washington State Association of Head Start and ECAP, which is WASA. Last year they picked 20-something parents, and you meet four times? Throughout the year at what are called face-to-face meetings. And while there, we got a bunch of training and a bunch of things, so advocacy, civics, how does a bill become a law, Schoolhouse Rock style.
That was the first thing I thought of as soon as you said. As soon as you said, how does a bill, I just, bam.
Yep.
I think that just popped up on my Facebook the other day.
It's a good
It works.
So the training is really intensive. It's normally 3 days long. And it's literally from morning till night. You're just doing stuff. Hey, Lisa, do you want to call your papa when we're done? You're talking to him right now? Sure. Okay. So that was pretty intense, and it was really hard the first couple of times because I was still nursing with Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would be with my sister during the day, and then I would go home, and so it would be like hour and a half drive home just so I could be with her so I could finish nursing.
Mommy, jump!
And then it got harder because she would be away for a couple of days. Can you keep your voice down, please? Inside voice?
I jump!
Okay, can you use your inside voice, please?
Yeah.
Thank you. And she would stay with my sister, and then she started staying with Corinth here. So Corinth is my friend,
mm-hmm.
and she started sleeping in her toddler bed. And it's really important, I've learned, in their developmental stages to keep routines. So as much as possible, I wanted her to be home so that she was in her bed, in her room, same time, every night, same right. routine, same everything. So the only time that's interrupted is when she goes to her dad's, and then they have their routine. But at least their routine is always the same, you know? So it was really hard.
Is he still living at that big house? Or?
No, he has moved out into his own place, I believe. I'm not sure if he's living with his girlfriend or not.
Mm.
I don't know. I do know that she had her own room for a little while and was sleeping in a toddler bed, I think. So now that they're having another little girl, I don't know if they're going to be sharing a room or not. So, I don't know.
Right.
But she adjusted really, really well. And wherever I was, I would call her on Skype and we would talk.
Greatest thing in the world is... I think.
Well, and her tablet has Skype, so she can show me whatever she's doing, you know?
Nice, yeah.
So it worked out really well. There's a piece on the floor, honey. Can you pick it up? So I would go away to these conferences, and some of them would be completely just parent ambassador. So it would be parents talking to parents about things that are important and how we get the word out about what we think is important for our children.
Right, because that's got to be different from city, state to state.
It really is. It really is. And you have other issues, too, like people who... Inside voice. People who don't think that early education or early intervention is important. There are... Even though there's science that shows that it's one of the most important things that you can do for a child, there are individuals who don't see the legitimacy in it. So they don't vote for it in bills, and they don't vote for it in law. And...
It's like, oh, they'll get all that when they go into preschool or kindergarten.
Exactly. So we have to learn how to talk to individuals who are for our side so that they can work from the inside.
Right.
And we have to learn how to talk to people who don't necessarily care and who don't want to give us the time of day. They have no desire whatsoever to talk to us. And we have to learn how to brush that aside and say, hey, here's what I'm here for. I'm your constituent, and this is what I care about, and this is what you should care about, too, and here's why.
I mean, I have millions of dollars that person over there does, but it doesn't make the message any less relevant.
Exactly.
Got a little silly penny.
So, we were taught how to do that. Before the Parent Ambassador Program, I would not have been able to do it. I don't think on my own I would have been like, oh, this person's so important. Who am I? I don't, you know, why are they going to listen to me?
Mm-hmm.
Now I know all of our people by name. Nathan Schlicker is on my Facebook, and we actually comment on each other's pictures. He sent Lisa a birthday card. He's not in office anymore, but you can develop those relationships based on how you approach the situation.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that he won't be in the future.
Right. That's what I think. I think he'll come back. He's pretty young.
Yeah.
So they teach us how to do that, and then we had the opportunity through the program to go to Washington, D.C., you had to apply,
mm-hmm.
and you had to answer questions like, why would you be a good representative of the Parent Ambassador Program? Why should you go and speak to your U.S. senator, your U.S. House of Representative person, in our case, Derek Helmer? Why should we pick you, essentially? And that's kind of where the leadership comes in. Like, Why would you be a good leader of this group? Mm-hmm. Why would you be a good representative? All those kind of things. And because I'm on the policy council, I also had to question, whether or not I felt like I was qualified to represent Kitsap Community Resources. Can I go and represent their name and feel like I'm doing a good job?
Yeah.
That's an important piece because I'm representing Kitsap County, essentially, because there's so many people connected to KCR. So that was really intense to answer those questions, and I applied, and I was accepted to go.
Yeah.
And
I would think, you know, forming the answers in your head and deciding, like, is this something I want to do, and am I qualified to do? That's one. I would think that the actual writing would almost be kind of easy because you are a product of Ian Sherman's essay writing.
You would think. Sadly, no. Writing has actually gotten really difficult.
Which, having read your stuff before, yeah. Well, never mind. You were hard on yourself back then, too.
Yeah. I'm hard on myself. That's the problem. So I always expect far more than I think anybody else does.
Mm.
So actually, one of the staff members of WASA, I was like, so what are you guys looking for in this application? You know what? No, I'm not going to apply. Why aren't you going to apply? You should apply. Like, I don't know how to answer these questions. Just answer them. No, but what are you looking for? Just answer the questions. And I'm like, but are you asking in the sense of, and I would make it so complicated, so incredibly complicated. And my director, actually, Connie Mueller, she was like, so should I make a reservation for you at the hotel? And I was like, for what? And she's like, for DC. And I was like, but I haven't even filled out my application yet. She was like, oh, you're going. I'm like, oh, great. Now I have this added pressure. But I did fill out the application, and I was the... So how that process worked is you filled out the application, you turned it in. The staff erased anything that would point you out. So if you wrote anything like my daughter Lisa, they would take that out and change it to my child so that nobody knew it was you. And then they emailed out all of the answers to all of the parent ambassadors and to the individuals who have funded the parent ambassador program because it's a grant.
Okay, yeah.
And then based on the votes of who should go, that's who got to go. So other parent ambassadors chose who they wanted to represent them.
Nice.
Which I think is a really smart way to do it because that's what you're doing. You're representing them. And I was the second person chosen.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool.
So so you get chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to go to some place where I lived for 4 years.
I love Washington, D.C. I'm so jealous that you lived there for 4 years. I would go live there in a heartbeat. Seriously.
It's definitely got its moments. It's got its negatives. It's a city populated by humans. It's got its problems. You know, but yeah. I mean, architecturally, just...
It's beautiful.
Yeah, you really, there's nothing. The colonial architecture around there is just awesome. I was just thinking to myself, I was like, oh, she's not going to have time to go see all the cool things that are there.
You know what actually is really unfortunate? So, I was there September 30th, and in the morning, everybody else who was there went sightseeing. Because of the impending shutdown.
Right.
On the next day.
Yeah.
And I opted to actually take a class that I thought was very important that was being offered at a conference about program governance. So I went to this class and everybody else went to like a Smithsonian of some sort and went and did this fun thing and this other fun thing. And the next day everything shut down. So I never got to see a lot of the fun things.
You can go around and see the outside of places.
But I was there after the veterans moved the barricade at the Vietnam Wall.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And there was no cop present when I showed up. And so I actually got to walk down the Vietnam Wall.
I've been down there a couple of times. There's something about that
space.
because it's kind of down into the ground a bit,
mm-hmm.
all traffic noise is above you or just blocked off by earth and rock.
Yeah.
You know, so there's just a silence there.
There is
deafening.
Agreed.
And you're just left there looking at this wall or your reflection in said wall, depending on how your eye is focusing at the moment. You're just seeing all these names in a almost church-like environment.
It was intense.
Yeah.
And it actually brought a lot to mind for me from when I was in high school. I went to an anti-Iraq war rally, a peace rally, mm-hmm. essentially. So it was pro-peace, not anti-war, but
right.
We were very much against the Iraq war. And my grandfather is a Vietnam vet, and he didn't talk to me for a couple months because of it, because I attended this rally.
Mm-hmm.
My uncle was in the Marines at the time. He was deployed, I think. And he just felt like I was not being supportive of the troops. And I kept trying to explain to him, like, it's not the same thing. I support our people. I don't support what we're doing. Like, I don't see the logic in it. It doesn't make sense. What are we fighting for? There's no proof. And I didn't understand what he had gone through, and I couldn't even comprehend, really, why he was so upset. And when I was walking down this wall, and I met this vet who was there, and he was looking for the names of some people that he had lost there, I just broke into tears, and I called my grandpa immediately, and I was like, I love you. And he was like, I love you, too.
What's wrong?
Exactly. And I was like, I'm here at the Vietnam Wall, and he was like, I still can't talk about that.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that
but
I've had that. I met some over in Korea going to the VFW there. And there's, you know, like DA, you know, DOD civilians, Department of Armed Civilians that live over there and,
mm-hmm.
you know, work on the bases. And you go to the VFW, and it's great when you're active duty because they'll buy all your beers for you and just tell you story after story after story up to a point.
And then it's...
Yeah, and... You know, and they'll be talking about a guy, you know, right, and they'll hit a certain point in the story, and it's like, and so anyway, what do you do? And it's like, and that's where it probably went south. You know, and it's like, he's not going to talk, I'm not going to push, I'm just going to appreciate the stories that he told in that moment.
My grandpa doesn't talk about any.
Yeah.
If you want more water, I can do
something. No, I'm fine, I think. Pretty sure, yeah.
Okay. So that was a really emotional moment for me. And then I was about 5 blocks away when the shooting happened on Capitol Hill.
Right.
So that was pretty intense. I didn't even know what was happening. I actually was flying out the day after everyone else, just because that's when my flight was leaving. And so a lot of... No, thank you.
No, you're taking a bite. So you're down on the mall when that was all going down?
Well, the mall was closed. Oh. I was...
You're in the area?
Yeah, I was in the area.
Were you close enough to hear the reports of
I heard shots? Sirens, but it's a city, right? So I assumed, like, it could be anything. It could be an ambulance. Somebody could be having a heart attack. Whatever. It didn't even faze me.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a phone call. Where are you? Walking down some street. I don't know. What do you mean?
Like, get to a corner so I can find it.
Right? I don't live here. I don't know where I am.
And all the streets right in that area look the same.
They really do.
Unless you hit a monument of some type, you got no idea what that
is. I was looking for coffee, which would not be unheard of.
You wouldn't. There's quite a few Starbucks.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, there are. I just was like, just wandering because I had hours to kill because I wasn't leaving till the next morning. And it was one of the staff members, and she was like, there's a shooting in Capitol Hill. Get into a building now. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's right there.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Okay. And she's like, get inside. And so I ducked into this little bar, and my friend joined me, who was with me there. She wasn't leaving until the next day either.
Wash. A boy.
Okay. and we watched the whole thing. on the TV. Because we weren't leaving that bar until we felt like it was safe.
Because they told you not to.
Yeah, pretty much. So everybody was calling me. One of the people was from Tacoma, and he was like, my wife just called me. Where are you? And I'm like, why are you calling me? Your wife just called you. Call her and tell her you're okay. And he's like, no, I talked to her. Are you okay? I'm fine. What's going on? There's a shooting. I know. I'm in a bar. But I'm fine. So it was pretty intense. But not only was that an intense part of it, but the day before, or 2 days before, I think it was the day before, we had a rally on Capitol Hill. So, like, literally the day before. And I had spoken the rally with my friend John, who was from Tacoma. And we shared our stories about Early Head Start and the benefits of it. And I met Patty Murray and Maria Campbell again. And, had good conversations with them. And I talked to the Washington Post, and they put my story in the newspaper.
Really?
Yeah. So, it was a very intense trip. You got apple in your teeth?
Is that something you're hoping to do again?
Yes. If it's needed.
Right.
Which it always is.
Yeah. I finally remember one of my thoughts. And it's... It, to me, it almost seems just a tad bit unfortunate that programs like that are even needed. Because, you know, you look back to, like, those old cliche sayings, like, you know, it takes a village and all this. And, you know, and even up to, like, when our parents were growing up, it's like, you know, you could go do things because... You know, and you could let your kid play outside because you knew that the next door neighbor, the person across the street, the person down the street, your buddy down the road, all are going to know what that kid's doing. And if that kid's doing wrong, he's going to hear about it all the way home.
Yep.
Before it, you know. And people were more involved in helping each other.
In general.
Just in general, right. Let alone, you know, raising, you know, kids. Mm-hmm. But now it just seems like too many people are me focused, you know, and like, or career focused or whatever. And it's just like, well, I've got to go, you know, do the work to make the money to pay for, you know, to pay for the things that the kid needs, you know, and don't take up enough time to go, hey kid, what do you need? You know, or like, here, kid, I think you need this. Let me do this, you know, versus let me buy this. You know, let me educate you with, you know, a little computer or a tablet. And, you know, granted, a lot of the things, great tools, and I wish I had them when I was a kid. Because a tablet is the coolest thing ever. It's Star Trek The Next Generation in 2014. But... You know, there's people that, you know, too many times I see are using that as the teacher versus being a teacher and using that as the tool.
Yeah. So here's my dilemma with our current society. Too many individuals are undereducated or underskilled. Sometimes out of their own doing, sometimes not.
Mm-hmm.
Because bad things happen to good people all the time. And it causes setbacks. Some people know how to climb out of it. Others do not. Either they were not built with the skills for it, or they weren't taught them because their parents didn't have the skills. But there's this generational gap of common sense and strength and perseverance. Not blaming any one person, but it does cause a problem when they have to work 3 jobs to get the pay of 1 person that could be working 8 hours a day. So they're gone the majority of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Their children, what are their children doing? Well, they could be in child care. They could be in a Head Start program. They could be in a preschool program. They could be in a lot of things. But then they go home, and they're either alone or they're with a family member. And maybe that family member uses one of these things as a teaching tool, or as a teacher, not as a tool. And they sit and watch TV, or they sit and play on their phone, or they sit and do whatever on their computer. Well, that's fine in moderation, but the kid needs to be interacted with. But that is missing. There's a piece missing there. People don't understand the importance of it, like you were saying. So it's all fine and cool and nifty and neat, but that's not a teacher.
Yeah, and then people sit there, you know, curious as to why their kid is antisocial or has some sort of social interaction issues, you know, like doesn't quite get it, you know, how communicating with other people works.
Has issue with anger, has issue with sadness, has issue with attention.
Yeah. Problems. Like, and I used to think it was just like, well, throw them in a sport, you know, put them out on a soccer field or, you know, or something. And, you know, and that helps.
It does.
Yeah, that is a way to go. But you know, now I see more of the, you know,
if you're going to put them in a sport, you also have to be involved in that sport.
Yes, exactly.
So there's this gap, you know, where
that.
It's survival so that we can make the same amount of money that one person makes in a normal, and I use normal mm-hmm. in a relative sense, but in a normal job, we have to work, you know, 3 or 4 part-time jobs or whatever it is to make this amount of money to survive. And we're not giving our children the basic skills that they need, so they're going to just do the same thing. Not everybody, but I see this happening a lot. It's a decision that the parent has to make, and they don't know how to make the right decision.
Apple. Yeah.
We get flosser, okay? Hold on a second.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets stuck in my teeth, too. That's why I keep a toothbrush and whatnot at work.
I want to do it. That's a 2-year-old thing.
Yep. And a 3-year-old thing. And a 4-year-old thing. A 14-year-old thing.
I guess, yeah. Okay, mommy's turn. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, my dad's pretty good with it. Like, he's... Now that he's retired and can be a, you know, a granddad and not have work stressing him out, he's rediscovered his love of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So he, like, coaches, like, the grandkids in basketball, softball.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's one thing that he's always loved, and it's kind of been the family thing for, since I was a kid, he was coaching. And then we got too old. You know, and now he's getting the chance to do it again with the grandkids, and it's one of the things that just brings him the most joy. Like all of his 20-some-odd years at the sheriff's department, he's like, yeah, he's proud of that. But like a kid, a group of kids hitting a double play, you know, turn into just, you know, without even thinking about it, on a crazy line drive that almost split the two. You know, the second, the shortstop and the third baseman, you know, he's just like, he gets more elation out of that, you know, or somebody that can't, you know, who comes to him and then parents are like, hey, he can't, you know, my daughter, you know, isn't a strong hitter. And then he looks at her, take a few swings, and he's like, change this, clink, and, you know, and this little kid starts taking it, you know, yard on, you know, he lights up, like, you know, and it's fun to watch, and it's fun to hear when I'm Skyping with him. He's just like, oh, the kids are doing this and this and that. And he's like, oh, and you're going to have to watch out for this one when she gets into high school. You're going to see her name in the papers. And I was like, this is awesome. I love hearing this stuff. You know, but he makes it a point of, like, every beginning of every season, you know, especially with the new parents, because he always has new kids, but a lot of them go, like, we're going to try and be on, can we be on your team next year?
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and he'll be like, here's the deal, like, you know, I've got them from this time to this time, and we're going to practice all these different days.
You know, fill in.
And it's like, and I expect you to have the child there at this time on these days to practice, and, you know, I expect you to get them to the games, and then I expect you, you know, to take time and go play catch with them in the backyard. You know, a couple of times, you know, and help them at home, because, you know, this can't be the only practice that they get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a huge thing. I guess I didn't really touch on this either. That's a huge thing that Head Start advocates for, is that parents need to be involved.
Yeah.
Not just in teaching their children, but they need to be involved in bettering themselves, because if they better themselves, they better their whole family. So when you teach a parent how to make good decisions, and when you give them the skills to make good budgeting decisions, then all of a sudden their money goes a longer way than it did before.
Yeah.
If you connect them with the right resources to hone on their skills for employment, they get a better job. They get a better job, and they're making better income, or they're more stable, and they're making good budgeting decisions. They're going to have more free time, because they're not going to be stressed, to go to their kid's ball game.
Yeah.
When they can go to their kid's ball game, their relationship. So it's like this whole comprehensive approach to reaching the children through the family as well.
Yeah.
Which is something that elementary schools and middle schools and high schools have, like, forgotten. And
nice.
PTA has become, how do we make money? And
yeah, or how can we get them to pass the standardized tests?
Right? It's not about how do we get more involved to better our children or better their chances. And that's something that really, really gets to me. And
yeah.
I really want to change.
One thing that annoyed the ever-living out of me, about a month or two ago, I was reading, because I have, you know, the newspaper back in Texas, you know, on my Facebook, and it was either them or one of the television stations posted in a story that there are people in Texas lobbying to remove Algebra 2 out of the high school curriculum.
What?
Because it's too hard.
Not for some kids.
Yeah. And I'm just like, no, don't remove it. You teach them better.
Right.
And like, it's like, I know quite a few teachers that could use a job down there. So, hire them, get them, you know,
yeah.
Make the classes a little bit smaller, and let's, you know, because, I mean, I hated Algebra 2, granted. You know, but at that point in my life, I hated most things. Because I was all angsty.
Oh, angst.
Yeah. But, and it wasn't that I was bad at math, I just didn't care.
Yeah, there's a difference.
At that point, in, you know, with things that were going on. That's not going to help them when they go to apply to college. I mean, that's mm-hmm. almost forcing them to go the community college route.
It is.
Because they're going to have to go do, what, Math 99 or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Or less, you know.
Depending on
how they test out, you know. So it's just going to cause them to spend money they don't have to take a class that they could have had for free to, you know, well, if they're in the public school system, get for free.
Yeah.
You know, quote-unquote. And I'm just like, that makes no sense to me.
It doesn't.
Granted, I have a problem with standardized education. Anyway.
Well,
because
yes.
What does an artist need math for? If the kid's an artist, give him a brush.
Well, okay. Definitely I agree with helping strengthen what they're already good at so that they have the confidence to approach other things. But an artist should also be good in math.
Right, and I'm not. I don't want to discount the stuff, but
like Montessori,
you know,
stuff.
Montessori, or you know, you got the STEM school up here, you know,
mm-hmm.
that focuses, you know, on the
science,
tech, engineering, math, you know, whatnot, you know, and
should be STEAM. Art.
Yeah. But there's also schools for that. You know, there's schools that focus, you know, they have a stronger focus on art, and I think that's great. But if a kid doesn't live in the right district, or if you can't afford private, you know, you're at the whim of whatever school is right there.
Yes. And Montessori is very expensive.
Yeah.
Which is the most common, I think, opportunity outside of STEM.
Yeah.
I
mean, there's a couple of great, like, alternative schools
yeah.
around here for little ones, like, her, you know, Lisa's age through, like, probably elementary, maybe middle.
But what about after that?
Yeah. then it's like pass the test.
I just think that the whole approach of education is just going the wrong way. But I'm hoping that with Obama's preschool act, I'm hoping that things start getting better. I don't know a lot about it, which one just came out.
Mm-hmm.
But I do hope that we start building on the foundation, which is the little ones, the little kids.
Yeah.
Stop. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because, I mean, as a guy that's done arty things, I live in the graphic design world. I play guitar. I'm working on becoming a better video editor for the wrestling group. So I can do some decent quality videos for them. I think the last art class I remember taking during my grade school through high school years was maybe sixth.
Ooh, that's unfortunate.
So from seventh through high school, and not until I was 20 going into the Army, and they were teaching me how to do graphic design, that gap, that third 12 to 20 gap,
mm-hmm.
There was no real art.
Years?
Yeah, there was no real art classes unless you count... Well, I guess you kind of have to count my guitar lessons. But as for getting it through standard education system, nothing.
That is unfortunate.
Like, I don't even think art was... Yeah, art was an elective. And at that point, I was playing soccer. And, which, once you get your PE credit, just turns into another elective.
Right.
And there was a couple of fun tech classes or like bird courses, like typing, that are just like bird electives.
Yeah,
exactly. Psych.
I think
like
I barely
high school that. Psych, which I slept through because at that point I had hit my little bit of depression. So I slept through psych and aced it because right before the test, he would essentially go through the test.
Yeah.
And he was like, y'all know you shouldn't be writing down the answers. Okay, let's go. And everybody would write down the answers. And then he'd hand the test. And if anything, he jumbled the questions up.
So you couldn't.
But it was all the exact same questions. All I had to do was correlate to the right one.
That's easy.
Yeah, and, granted, I learned something in that. It's like, I'm a sheep, or I was a sheep, everybody else was doing it, but I literally slept. Like, I would go into that class, I put my books down, put my head on the desk, and then when the bell rang, somebody would nudge me, and I'd get up and go to the next class. But I didn't have art.
That's sad.
Yeah.
Because think if you had...
Oh, if I'd have been
exposed to it,
yeah, because like my manual drawing, like you gave me a pencil and paper, and like I better have a good eraser because I'm gonna use it a lot.
Yeah, I'm not very good at drawing.
But slap me in front of a computer and give me a mouse click, and I can do up some pretty cool things. I think.
I think so.
But. I know that I would be so much better if I'd have had some more drawing classes, if I'd have had a painting class, or if I had not been pressured or required to, but if it had been put in my face a little bit more, as an option, versus, like, when are you going to use that kind of thing? Like, even my guidance counselor is like, you can take art, but not like you're gonna, be able to use it later on. Here, take this, tech class, whatever it was. And I took it and I hated it. Every little bit of it.
Every little bit of it?
Every little bit of it I hated. That was the worst semester. Or at least that hour a day was the worst semester.
trying to think what my worst class was. I loved high school.
I
loved college. I miss going to school.
Yeah,
didn't have so much stress associated with it.
I loved the college experience, at least through OC. I'm pretty sure if I had continued on, I still would have continued to love it, you know, going to UW or whatever, but that's a trek that I don't want to make right now, and my GI Bill was running out.
So
it's time to get a job. Thankfully, I love my job.
Thankfully.
Yeah. But no, I hated high school. I was not a fan of it.
I loved it.
I was shy. I'm not going to even say socially awkward. I was kind of socially inept. Unless I could find that one thing that the other person was interested in that I could just latch on to and browbeat it. Like, I'd be like, oh, you did the Tim Burton Batman movie. Let's talk about that. And bam. And I could use that as a way to get into some sort of semblance of a friendship. Or, you know, the people that would all hang out at the rec center across the street smoking cigarettes before class. Well, I started smoking. So I needed a place to go smoke cigarettes. So I would go over there and we would have, smoking cigarette small talk that gave me some semblance of a connection. There is no one, I think, on even my current Facebook set of quote-unquote friends, on my friends list that is from those years.
I wasn't a smoker then, so when I said right, I would latch on to whatever we had in common and just be friends out of that. And I do have a good number of friends from high school, but I was weird. And I was very sick and twisted in my little head. And I am curious to see what happens when I go back for my 10-year reunion next year, because I'm a completely different person than I was then. Obviously, it's been 10 years.
Right.
But also, like, I look back and I'm like, wow, I was just weird.
Like, I would have hated myself.
I don't know what I hated, but I definitely pushed boundaries and made people uncomfortable on purpose.
Yeah, and I was the exact opposite. I was like, how can I conform? How can I do something to please? How can I get you to not dislike me?
When I was a cheerleader, and everyone had this stigma about what cheerleaders were supposed to be like. I was an awesome cheerleader. but there was a stigma, and I tried to break that stigma, and I sort of succeeded, sort of not. And then I stopped doing cheerleading, and then I was all yearbook. Like, that was my thing.
I look back now, and I should have done yearbook, but I don't... I don't think that we had had. I don't know that we had a big yearbook thing. I think that was more handled by the school. I don't remember there being like a yearbook club of any notoriety. It was very. Our yearbooks were very cut and dry. There was nothing fun about them that I remember, and I ended up flipping through a couple of them when I went home in September. And it's just like, meh. Oh. Okay. Well, I think hour 44 is enough.
Because
my computer's saying you're about to run out of battery, dick.
Well, I can always tell you about Georgia some other time.
Well, actually, let me take a look. How am I doing on this?
All right, y'all, time to pump the brakes and put a pin in the conversation yet again, because I tell you what, we had so much fun conversating. We just kept on going for yet another hour, and you're going to get that extra last bit next time. So until then, I've been John Rodriguez. This has been Let's Have a Chat. Take care of you.